Hello and welcome to the Strat News Global Podcast. I am Nitin Gokhale. In this edition, I am speaking to Northern Army Commander Lieutenant General Upendra Dwivedi, who gave me an idea about the changed tactics as far as counter-insurgency, counter-infiltration grid of the Indian Army is concerned along the line of control with Pakistan, and how they are seeking and destroying or trying to destroy terrorist infrastructure as well as terrorist trying to come into Jammu and Kashmir. The second point he made, and which was significant, was about the situation along the line of actual control with China, which he described as stable but not normal, which is significant. Do take a listen for something interesting that he speaks.
I want to start with the abrogation of Article 370 4 years ago.
Yes.
And what has happened since then? You know, if you can give me a sort of broad picture of these last 4 years, what has happened in Jammu and Kashmir?
So let me begin with giving you two examples. I was interacting with one of the senior ladies married to one of the ex-deputy chief minister. And she said when the abrogation of Article 370 took place, the children, when they came home, earlier the children used to be asked by a teacher that please make a map of the flag of India and the flag of a country and bring it back. So they used to go back and ask, Mummy, do you have to wait for the Pakistan or for India?
Oh, why? Wow.
But Article 370 abrogation made very clear that it has to be Indian map which has to be.
Right. Mm.
The second issue which is there is recently Masroor Wani, sub-inspector who was playing cricket with the children.
Right.
It happened on 29th of October.
Mm-hmm.
When the terrorists fired at him, the whole community, all the children ran after the terrorists.
Oh my God.
So it means there is a sea change which has taken. Yeah. The mindset change has taken. Mm. The society is accepting this as a welcome change.
Right. So, and that is of course at the fundamental change, at the fundamental
yes.
level. People's mindset changing at the fundamental level. When you look at the other aspects of it, you know, say infrastructure, governance. Of course, army is also part of that governance structure. But what do you observe? I mean, are people a little more freer to more tourists are coming, or what has been the observation?
Okay, let me put it in two parameters.
Right.
First parameter is, has the terrorism gone down?
Right.
So if I can say that from 2022, what we see is approximately 1/4 of violence what we have seen this year. Even the recruitment has come down to 15 from peak 2020 when it was 61.
Okay.
Similarly, as far as the terrorists killed who are there, has also come down tremendously.
Mm-hmm.
Now coming on to the other parameters, if you see Lal Chowk today,
even
the hustle and bustle is like you see in Chand Chowk. Similarly, yeah. The tourists which are there, we are expecting approximately 2.35 tourists coming this time, that is crores. That is increase of 25% from last year.
Wonderful.
Now if you look at Amarnath Yatra, this time we have gone for 4.5 lakhs, which is improvement from 3.75 lakhs crores last year.
That's right.
Lakhs last year.
Yeah.
So if you see, all the indicators are pointing towards and development.
So obviously, people are feeling much safer. The others also outside Jammu and Kashmir are also looking at Jammu and Kashmir as a place to visit rather than, you know, what used to happen earlier.
Yes.
The army's contribution, I want to speak about, because army has now spent more than 33 years fighting the insurgency, militancy, whatever you want to call it, terrorism. But now, what is the army's main role in the hinterland? I'm not talking about the line of control, but in the hinterland, how are you meshing your policies with the civil administration?
So, firstly, I will take on as far as the nation building is concerned, if we look into
right.
it. What we have to understand, army has been with the populace, sukh dukh ka saath.
Bilkul.
Main samay hu, main hamesha saath pe rahun. And this is what is happening now. Since we have a strong leadership,
mm-hmm.
we have the reach in the outer areas, in the farther reaches. We have the hinterland network.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we have the funds which is given to us in form of Ops Sadbhavna.
Right.
And then we have great military and civil synergy.
Mm-hmm.
Keeping this, you know, all the factors, what we are looking at, that are we able to help out in the national integration of JNK in the national mainstream? We are playing a very pivotal role.
Mm-hmm.
Then we called it security assurance.
Right.
Now all the infrastructure development which is taking place in the last 4-5 years, you would have seen the pace has increased.
Exactly.
The economic the infusion of funds which is there, the pace has increased.
Mm.
All the children who were going outside and picking up jobs, now they are wanting to come back and give back to the society. So these are the changes which are taking place. And of course, in terms of economic development, we have approximately 7,400 crores of salary which the army itself gets here. Even if 20% is pitched in back, you can just imagine.
Oh, yes.
And similarly, 7,500 crores is what we are spending here in terms of procurement, employment of local labor, porters, ponies.
Right.
So, major role.
So, huge contribution economically, yes. And you know, the circulation of money which takes
yes.
place, that activity is taking place.
Yes.
And I think the army also, if I correct me if I am wrong, that the army also contributes in skill development, in giving new skills to women, children. Many centers I've seen, and I get reports from distant NGOs from Pune and Bangalore that they're coming and working here. So what is that aspect?
You are absolutely right. Firstly, NGOs are big help to us. When I'm saying big help to us, to Jammu Kashmir, and army is the biggest conduit because we enjoy that trust. And like I told you, the connection which we have in the hinterland.
Right.
Now, coming on to Prime Minister Kaushal Vikas Yojana, Project Himayat. So, Northern Command, all the core headquarters and DIV headquarters have taken up a lot of projects where we are going in for skilling in various forms.
Right.
Whether it's for digitization, whether it's for tailoring, whether it is also for teaching. We are also running Army Goodwill schools, and approximately 15,000 children are studying there, out of which 40% are women, the girl child.
So, that's empowerment.
Yes. And 2,000 teachers are there in that. So, the HICO system, as it is, like we say, that a sampling we can do.
Right.
So, we are providing a shining path to it. Now, others have to just follow it so that slowly and slowly it enhances the scope.
See, you talked about skilling, security assurance. That also then gives confidence to big industrial houses or investors to come into Jammu and Kashmir. I think that's the reports that one has been, you know, reading and talking to people. One understands that a lot of investment is at least planned, if not completely done here.
You're absolutely right. See, G20 which has taken place.
Right.
And similarly, such activities, when they take place here, the investors' confidence go high. When I also speak to various people, they say, look, we have the money.
Right.
We want to invest in such area, but how to go about it?
Right.
And the initiative which have been taken by the civil government, now even from West Asia firms are coming forward and trying to invest here.
Right.
Now we also have a lot of cold storage, etc. coming up.
Right.
So the problem which used to be there for the apple trade, there is a band or there are problems.
Yeah.
All those problems also being taken care of.
Right.
So what is happening? The market itself is reaching here and then picking up the products and taking to balance of India.
So I think overall, as I see, if just to finish this civic, military civic action and also the coordination, is that now there is a normalcy which we see elsewhere in the, we used to see elsewhere in the country, but not in Jammu and Kashmir. I think one can sum up by saying that Jammu and Kashmir is now a normal state or a union territory.
Here I would like to just add on one more issue.
Right.
The seed was sown in 2019 August.
Right.
Now there's a small sapling has come up.
Yes.
It has become a mini plant.
Right.
Now all these stakeholders to make sure that this plant is protected to become a big tree. So calling it normal, yes, but with a degree of
caution. Yeah, I think very well put. That the excellent summation of what we talked about. But let me come to one constant factor in this: Pakistan's attempt to continue the proxy war, which it had launched 30-35 years ago. Where are we on that? Because there are sporadic attacks, sporadic killings. So I want you to tell us or tell our viewers in two parts. So one is the situation on the line of control, and Pakistan's attempts to keep the flames burning as far as insurgency or militancy or terrorism is concerned.
So initially, when I gave out the figures of the parameters,
right.
Now these parameters also cause of worry for Pakistan. As you are aware, from the FATF grey list, they have been taken out.
Right.
The internal turmoil or internal disturbance, political disturbance which are there in Pakistan are very known to you. So this is the time when they want to divert the mind. Second issue is, in the month of May, June, we are likely to have the elections, parliamentary elections.
Right.
Now once these elections are called as free and fair, what happens, any kind of a representation by Pakistan thereafter becomes
right.
ineffective. As along the LC, if you see that, what has happened this time, that the infiltration attempts have been very, very high.
Right.
Though we have ensured zero infiltration in 2023,
right.
But the attempts have been very high. In LC itself, for the first time, we have been able to kill, which is 200 times of the previous 3 years included together.
I see.
So 43 foreign terrorists we have killed along the LC.
Right.
Now that is what something is non-penetrable to.
Mm.
That's why what they are doing is that they are trying to sent FTs. Mm-hmm. They are also trying to revive those local terrorists who had gone across, mm-hmm. and they have actually become quiet.
Right.
And or they have become launch commanders, OGWs, all the. The last two, three incidents which we have seen,
right.
that the old LTs who were there, local terrorists, mm-hmm. were being tried to infiltrate.
Mm-hmm.
And that we have taken care of.
Anyway. Right. Okay.
Coming on to the hinterland. Mm-hmm. Hinterland, what has happened, the recruitment has come down.
Mm-hmm.
So what they are doing is, they are trying to now send the FTs mm-hmm. who are trying to revive mm-hmm. this kind of a terrorism.
I see.
We are trying to keep our control on it.
Mm-hmm.
And the good synergy what we enjoy with the police, with the intelligences,
mm-hmm.
which I will say is the best in the world today. And that is how we've been able to curb it to a great extent.
So you have that unified command structure still going?
We have a unified command structure mm-hmm. and the best part is that the frequency is very high
mm-hmm.
and we have a free and frank discussion.
Right.
And even the frequent visits of the Home Minister, as the Central Home Minister, mm-hmm. he comes here and takes the stock.
Okay. And but one of the trends that I noticed, and again, I may be wrong in this, but the degree of attacks or violence or killings are happening more in south of Pir Panjal. On the from maybe coming from the IB, coming from the line of control, or attacks are happening there. Is there a kind of shift of strategy from Pakistan's side or from the foreign terrorists, as you call them?
Well, for the last 10 years, mm. Rajouri, Poonch, mm. Doda, Kishtwar,
right.
all this area has seen a major development.
Right.
The prosperity has been there.
Mm.
People have been very happy to the extent that all the roads, the Mughal road, which is
yes.
which goes via
the alternate road.
Yes, by yes, Rajouri.
Right.
Now all these roads have seen a major traffic.
Mm-hmm.
The homestay was being encouraged,
mm-hmm.
and there was a company which said that we'll take you to the forward areas also to see how things are.
Right.
So this peace and prosperity was something not palatable to Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
And if you see the geographical location, what happens, which you rightly said,
mm.
that besides LC, the national highway which is there, mm. Doda Kishtwar border which is there with Himachal Pradesh,
right.
all these places are mm. where from where the terrorists can move in.
Mm.
So therefore, the ecosystem which was there, they were trying to revive it.
Mm.
And if, what we have done here, if you see all the actions which have taken place,
mm.
the neutralization of the FTs have been high.
Okay.
So that is something which has been there, and what we have done, we have carried out a reorganization.
Mm-hmm.
The Rashtri Rifle which we had sent on the fencing,
right.
basically we wanted to control on the infiltration.
Right.
We have reoriented towards the hinterland. And that has made paid major dividends mm-hmm. in last 4-5 months.
Right.
And as I talk to you, the operations are on today,
uh-huh.
and there are two terrorists which are holed up.
Right. So when you say foreign terrorists or the FTs, what nationalities are there? Have you made some kind of analysis on that, or they're just Afghans or some coming from somewhere else? Any details on that available?
At this point of time, it will be difficult to say whether they're Afghans or not.
Mm-hmm.
But 2-3 cases we have got to know that they were trained.
Right.
They were trained there.
In Afghanistan?
Yes.
I see.
They were trained mm-hmm. who have been neutralized here.
Right.
But nationality as of now,
that's
we consider
yeah.
that it is the Western adversary only.
That's right. And when you say Pakistan, you know, obviously is looking at the prosperity here in Jammu and Kashmir and all that. What is your assessment about Pakistan occupied Jammu and Kashmir, as we call it, or POK, as it is called in popular parlance? Is there a kind of unrest there, or you must be keeping your people must be keeping a watch? We get to hear some protests against Pakistan government and all that. What is the situation in POJK?
The situation is not encouraging.
Mm-hmm.
Gilgit, Baltistan, there are a lot of representations.
Right.
Because the way there is a neighboring country which has gone in for a kind of environmental degradation mm-hmm. there in order to construct dams, etc.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And whatever is being done there,
mm-hmm.
the dividends are not being felt by the local population.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, there's a major representation.
Right.
Coming on to the cost factor, as you are aware, mm-hmm. that one of the videos that I was seeing,
right.
that he was saying that we are getting 1200 rupees kg atta.
Okay.
And in India, we are getting 40 rupees kg. Why should we go to India and buy that atta?
Right.
So that is the kind of a frustration which is there. Similarly,
mm-hmm.
in the border areas, what we are seeing,
mm-hmm.
that the administrative hard high-handedness which was there,
mm.
that is being represented by the local population.
So they are resented, they're quite, when the resentment is very high, you would
very
think.
High.
So, you know, see, this is the difference that they've always noticed, the,
yes.
in the development parameters of the Jammu and Kashmir Union Territory now, and what they face in the administration there. So, is the support, you would say, eventually, the people there will not support all these terrorist infrastructure or whatever. It's still controlled by the Pakistani army, I'm sure. But eventually, people will also rise up against it. Would you think that way?
You're absolutely right. Now, how we have been able to ensure zero infiltration?
Right.
Zero infiltration can only be ensured once we have the information from where their launch pads are, where camps are, and we are generally able to get some kind of information. Right. That is how we are able to show. It means the local populace is not in that much of support what it used to be earlier.
Oh, I see. So, talking about launch pads and the numbers of terrorists or hold up in those launch pads or the camps there, what is the current figure or the latest figures that you have? I'd seen some figures, but you would have a better, even if you don't have it offhand, some approximation can be really helpful.
If I can tell you, along the complete Western Front, we'll be having approximately 300 terrorists who would be waiting for induction.
I see.
And approximately 10 to 12 camps, which are active as of now.
Right.
And rest all will be made active as per the
requirement. Whenever required.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The second aspect is also there, that is not only the terrorist movement.
Mm-hmm.
What they are doing now, that with the help of drone,
right,
they are dropping the drugs, they are dropping the equipment, they have warmax tools. Second thing is they are developing the drug culture.
Ah.
So drug becomes a mode of payment.
Right.
And once that conduit starts working, the network starts working, then the same network will also be used for movement of warmax tools.
I see.
That is something which is a caution which we need to put in.
So one final question on the Pakistan, the Western Front and Jammu and Kashmir. Like the armies world over, and the Indian Army in particular, is now using technology more and more for all its operations wherever. Do you find that same trend amongst the terrorists also? Are the Pakistani army personnel giving them training on using technology to evade detection, or maybe use technology for other stuff when they carry out attacks, something of that kind?
Yes, as far as the foreign terrorists are concerned, they are being given adequate training, and then only they are being sent inside.
Right.
And the communication equipment which they have, that is of a very, I can say, very superior quality. And that is how they are able to communicate across.
Right.
And they have made the silos with the ecosystem. There are 3-4 people supporting, but they don't know who all are supporting each other. So that is the kind of a silo system they have been able to fake out. That is why we say that it is the terrorist and the ecosystem both have to be addressed at the same time.
Right. So in that sense, the challenge remains in a way for the Northern Command, but maybe the degree of challenge is a little lower than before. But you have to be vigilant all the time, I'm sure.
Yes, and this is the time when we are reaching out to them. Earlier, we used to wait for them. Now we are reaching out because the pressure is on, so they are going to the higher reaches.
Oh, so you are actually going into their territory or going on an offensive rather than waiting for them to come.
Yes, so it's a seek and destroy.
Right.
When you have seek and destroy, the degree of difficulty for the security forces will also be high.
So that is the thing. I think you've explained it very well. People must know that if the casualties on the security forces side is higher, it's because you are actually seeking them out and going there.
Yes. So it's a change of complete techniques, tactics and procedures.
So instead of allowing them to come into on the fence or beyond the fence and then killing them, you are actually going out and doing this.
Not across the LC.
Not the LC.
But in the hinterland. Hinterland, because there's a lot of underdeveloped areas.
Right.
So those will not be a kind of a shelter for them anymore.
Oh, I see. So that's a big change of tactic, and that is why I suppose sometimes the worry about higher casualties among security forces.
Yes, that is something there. And the Indian Army leadership, as you are aware, they always lead from front.
Exactly.
Whether it's Kargil or Galwan.
Yes.
So that will continue.
That's right. General Dwivedi, let me come to the other issue that Northern Command handles, and that is, I think, now the primary issue, I'm sure, in your own operational philosophy also. The situation on the line of actual control with China, the northern frontier. If you can give me an assessment of where we are after nearly 3.5 years of the standoff starting with May 2020.
So, firstly, we have to see how the situation today. Do we have additional deployment of troops? Yes. Do we have high alertness of troops? Yes, because we have the ISR very active. We have the, if I can say that, the patrolling is very active. Similarly, if we have to look at, is the command control setup active, including SOS management? Yes. So if you see all these factors, what it shows that the situation is stable, but sensitive and not normal.
Not normal. Oh, that is important to understand for the people, the viewers.
and the countrymen, because in the public opinion, one of the things that always occupies their mind is China is the aggressor. India has halted them in their tracks for the last 3.5 years, but we don't know which way it will go. I want you to tell us that after, say, the first disengagement took place in February 2021, what has been the progress as far as getting the status quo ante is concerned, and how are we pressing for it?
Yeah, firstly, we have to see that out of the 7 friction issues which were there, 5 we have been able to resolve.
Right.
With persistence approach, if I can say that, from both the sides.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 issues are still balanced.
Right.
Now, coming on to the...
And there are Depsang and Demchok, if I know correctly.
Yes, they are also included in that.
Right.
And when we have on the table, there are so many other issues also which we discuss, because we have to bring back to normal.
Mm-hmm.
What has happened? The trust has been broken.
Mm.
The protocols have been broken.
Right.
The agreements which have been there, they have not been adhered to.
Mm.
So, therefore, now there is a requirement to re-establish the trust.
Right.
We have to review the protocols and agreements.
Mm-hmm.
Do we need a new one? That's a question we need to ask now.
Mm-hmm.
Coming on to what all actions which we have taken to make sure that this kind of a agreement or the stability moves further ahead.
Mm-hmm.
As far as precondition is concerned, it's very clear that we want the disengagement first.
Mm.
Then we will go for de-escalation.
Right.
And then the third stage, we will be looking at a normal management of LAC.
Mm.
And then, of course, like it's already there, Vijayan Joshi also told you, that the clarification of LAC and the demarcation.
Right.
So these are various stages what we are
looking
at. But over a period of time, what we have done, that we have carried out the rebalancing 1.0, what we call, and reorientation of troops.
Right.
So in 2010, when General Joshi was the brigade commander, there were only 2 battalions.
Yes.
And today we have 2 divisions worth.
Right.
And it's all only 2 divisions.
Mm.
There's so many force multipliers which have got built up there.
Right.
So keeping this in view, as of today, our force level is generally matching what enemy is having across or the adversary is having across.
Right. So in fact, you spoke about 2010. In January 2010, when General Joshi was the brigade commander in Tangse, I had the opportunity to travel on the entire Eastern Ladakh front for 10 days before attending the BPM, which used to take place in Chushul. It still takes place in Chushul, I'm sure. Like you rightly said, 2 battalions. From there, we have come to 2 divisions and then the force multipliers. But then to sustain these 2 divisions and force multipliers, you need to have infrastructure.
Yes.
That infrastructure can't be built overnight. So where are we as far as infrastructure progress is concerned?
That's a very pertinent question, because firstly we have to see that what are the organizations over a period of time which have come up to oversee this infrastructure development.
Right.
In March this year, Raksha Mantri called for a secretary, the ministers conference.
Right.
Even the NSA was there, and even the state heads of all the northern front border area states were there.
Mm-hmm.
There he took a review. Thereafter, the cabinet secretary and other secretaries were made responsible to carry out review.
Mm-hmm.
And similar organizations were created at the level of states.
I see.
And where our chief of staff, Northern Command, is also the secretary of that committee.
Mm-hmm.
So, since all these committees have come up, what has happened, it is easier for all the kind of stakeholders to collaborate. And to begin with, the infrastructure building, if you are looking at, we have now grown up to 61,000 in Eastern Ladakh itself.
Right.
As far as the civil sponsored roads are concerned, I will take your mind to Chushul Demchok Road via Dungti Phukche.
Right.
That's on the southern side along the Indus River.
That's right.
Now, this road is coming up in a big way.
Mm-hmm.
Because in our case, what is there, that we have the border villages.
Mm-hmm.
And since we have the villages, the civil infrastructure can come up at those places.
Right.
Similarly, there is a road as you cross Khardungla towards going to Glacier.
Sure.
There is a place called as Khalsar.
Mm.
From Khalsar, you can go to Shyok Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And this is called as Khalsar Agam Shyok Road.
I see.
And this is also being given impetus by the civil administration.
Mm-hmm. So, you have that Saserla pass also on that axis?
Yes, you are absolutely right. So, as we go further towards the Siachen Glacier,
right,
halfway there is a point called as Sasoma.
Sasoma, Saserla.
From Sasoma, we cross over to Shyok Valley again.
Right.
That is from Nubra to Shyok Valley.
Sure.
And you are absolutely right. Saserla is the place from which place we have Saser Brangsa. We have been able to kind of have the connectivity.
Right.
And from there, we are going slightly northward to go to DBO directly via Gapshan. and slightly eastward, that is, go to Burtse via Morgo.
Oh, so alternative accesses are coming up, roads are coming up.
Yes, yes.
In that sense.
Yes, and the DSDBO road, which is approximately 256 kilometer,
right,
that is complete in all respects.
I see. So that is where I think the force multiplier has come as far as the land connectivity is concerned. Air connectivity is always, I mean, always there, possible. But land connectivity is important. I remember coming to Leh in October 2020 on the third axis from Rohtang via Darcha, Padam,
yes.
Nimu, and then coming to Leh. What has been the progress on that road now?
Yes. So, before that you talked about the air bridge also.
Right.
So, let me tell you that as far as the Leh, Thoyes and Kargil airfields are concerned, they are being improved.
I see.
And the Nyoma airfield is under construction.
Mm-hmm.
So, that will definitely give us various options.
Right.
Coming on to the two arteries which we have or access, as far as Jozila access is concerned, the Zedmo tunnel is nearly ready.
Right.
And Jozila tunnel, is the progress is satisfactory.
Mm-hmm.
And as per the timelines which have been given out by the ministry, we'll be able to meet the target.
Right.
Coming on to the Rohtang side or the Atal tunnel side, if I can say that. From place called as Darcha, there are two axes. One is going via Barlachla.
Right.
That of course during the winter season it becomes difficult to go
That's
through.
That's right.
Shinkunla, which is there, the contract process is on as of now.
Okay.
And once that tunnel comes up, we will be able to go to Padam,
right,
to move all this area.
Mm-hmm.
And there also we are looking for a kind of a direct connection,
right,
to Leh.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully by next year we should be able to achieve that.
So
also,
which will again, you know, enhance your connectivity, logistics chain, everything will happen when these three separate axes are available to you.
Yes.
At different places.
That will be a big game changer for us.
Right. Great. Great to know that. I forgot to ask you in the previous thing when we spoke about friction points being resolved, five of them resolved, two are still remaining. You've done 20 rounds of negotiations with the Chinese, and I think there must be a lot of takeaways from those negotiations, which we can talk about some other time. But is there also now a percolation of those talks to a lower level on a regular basis, much more exchanges than what they would have been in, say, 2020 or 2021?
You're absolutely right. When I took over the command of this Northern Army Command, one thing which I said, there is no physical jostling which will take place.
Right.
And to overcome that, the rules of engagement were changed.
Mm-hmm.
And second thing what we have started, that earlier there was an embargo on talks at various levels.
Okay.
The first thing which I did was that talks must take place at the commanding officer level,
mm-hmm,
brigade commander level, div commander level and corps commander level.
Right.
So what's happening, there are some localized issues
which
can be resolved at the CO and commander level.
Okay.
Now that is helping us in a big way, because lower the level of resolution, it is easier to resolve those issues.
That's right, because they are constantly involved in it at the lower level.
Yes.
And physically involved.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And even the frequency of hotline messages has increased, because exchange of communication allows us to have a constructive engagement, and it addresses our mutual concern also.
Right. So you spoke about the resolution. We spoke about the first disengagement where you said both sides want things to happen. Has there been a softening of a stand from the Chinese side? What's your overall assessment about their intentions about this particular episode? I mean, it's been now 3.5 years. I can't call it an episode. It's an ongoing thing. But has there been any change in their attitude?
One thing we have to see as a Clausewitzian trinity is concerned.
Right.
People, because of passion, are irrational.
Right.
The government will always be rational, and military will always be non-rational.
Right.
Therefore, when it comes to negotiations, you also take classes on that, you'll realize that we both have to have a win-win situation if we want the negotiations to move forward.
Right.
Therefore, we both are trying to reach a common point, and we are having a frank and candid discussion.
Right.
We are looking at mutual concerns are addressed.
Right.
And we are trying to provide the momentum from both the sides. But as we cut closer to the limited kind of areas of concern, you will find the areas are very critical in nature, and it takes time to kind of come to the negotiating table and look for the options which are mutually acceptable.
Right. On that one final point, I want that for again benefit of the people who have a lot of apprehension, they don't know what the geography is, what is happening. There is always constant, I would say, commentary and analysis on oh, India is in a disadvantageous position in Depsang, Demchok is also not at a very advantageous position. I want you as Northern Army Commander to tell people where are we as far as the situation is concerned. Are we on top of things? Are we in control? What is the situation there?
So as a preamble to that, Raksha Mantri has given this statement in Parliament.
Right.
Even our External Affairs Minister has been explaining the same thing. Even General Joshi spoke about it. Recently, Lieutenant Governor of Ladakh, he said that I have gone to the forward areas and I can assure you not even an inch of ground has been taken. Now what happens when the two forces are facing each other and it leads to a violence, then what is the way out?
Right.
The way out is to earmark some areas which are mutually agreed non-patrolling zones.
Sure.
So that wherever they were coming, they will not be coming. Where we were going, we will not be going.
Of course.
Because the aim is what? Basically, we are looking at peace and stability.
Sure.
We want to prevent violence. So keeping these two factors and give negotiations the time.
Right.
So to gain time, this is the only way forward.
That's right. So I think you've clarified it very well that, you know, this is where we are slowly inching forward in getting the resolution done. But let me move away from there and come to the infrastructure on the other side. One of the concerns internationally, I would say, is that China has now built infrastructure where it didn't exist in Aksai Chin, for instance. And it looks like they're there for, you know, a permanent kind of deployment in Aksai Chin, some of these areas. What is your assessment on that and what is our response to that? Two parts.
Yes. So firstly, if we have to look at China is looking at border area development in terms of making the local population settle down there,
right,
in terms of enhancing the economy and kind of encouraging tourism.
Right.
Now, if you also see G219 is passing through that area. So what it means, these are some defined parameters which are there.
Sure.
But what overall it's developing, it is creating a comprehensive network of transportation system.
Sure.
Whether it's the aerial or it's train or the roads and bridges which is there. So he is having a complete ecosystem which is being developed.
Right.
Coming on closer to the eastern Ladakh, G219, which is there, as you are aware, that this 219 has become a kind of a lifeline. All the logistic echelons, the training areas and the movement and everything is taking place along with that.
Correct.
Now the latest development which is taking place, that the laterals which are coming toward the westwards, that is toward the eastern Ladakh, there the construction is taking place a lot. The cross laterals are coming up. The water bodies, the number of bridges are coming up to cross those bodies, water bodies. As a result, the options to military maneuver mobilization which will enhance much more. And along the LAC, what they are also looking at, a road from the open media, what we see, is G695.
The new alignment that they are doing. Yeah.
So this new line will give them additional flexibility to move troops.
Right.
And as you are aware, is there a local population in this area?
No.
We know there is a sparsely populated, barren area. So it is well understood it is meant for what purpose.
Right. So what is our response then? Because, you know, we have talked about some roads coming up. You know, we are also doing the enhancement of our airfields, whichever available. But as a long-term response or say speedy induction of reinforcements, let me say, where are we on those terms after, you know, so 2020 and now? I just want to compare that.
Yes. So basically any infrastructure has the aim of, basically it should be a force and resource enabler,
right,
that we should be able to project it at the right time at the right point. So in the border areas, the kind of off-work roads which we have developed, that is something we need to look into. The force multipliers in terms of vehicles which are required to kind of quickly mobilize, those have been moved where the roads and tracks may not be existing. And all the roads which are there, the bridges have been strengthened, like DSDBO and other places. And as a result, the A vehicles, we have been able to move to all these places.
Okay.
Similarly, the air bridge which I can talk about, that air bridge, now we have the aeroplanes which are there from the C-17, etc. We are moving. The Air India chartered planes are also coming up to these areas.
Right.
Now we look at which are the agencies which are helping us out in this. Within the MOD itself, we have the BRO, where the funding has increased to 5,000 crore from the last year, 3,500 crore. It's a 43% increase which is there.
Correct.
Similarly, the OPWORKS, the money has nearly doubled. MES is now reaching out to further places. Similarly, MORTH, they are giving a lot of funding. The local government, I told you, CDFD road, and they are giving a lot of funding. Air Force is like looking at Neuma AFE. So all these agencies which are there, ITBP roads which will be funded by MHA. So we have a common grip and to kind of coordinate that, in command headquarters, we have something called as Joint Infrastructure Cell.
Oh, that's a new thing.
Yes. Yeah. And this is being headed by Chief of Staff, Northern Command.
Right.
Where all these stakeholders come together, discuss.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that if a helipad is to be made, something has to be made. So there's no duplicity of effort.
Right.
And these are the things which are helping us. Also, the Gati Shakti portal which has come up.
Right.
Now what happens, let's say a road is required by civil administration, but that not in the higher priority.
Right.
But the military also requires that road.
Yes.
Well, both combine the
funds. So dual purpose roads.
So this is what is something helping us.
Mm-hmm.
And in our case, what has happened since we have developed the road,
right.
And now it is being improved by the civil administration. Why? Because it's for the dual purpose.
The dual purpose.
No, and same is the case with the helipads.
That's right.
Because forward area, now we are having this kind of a thing. Any medical evacuation required for the civilians and all that, we are always there.
Right. So, in that case, the vibrant villages are also being introduced across the, near the LAC that is there. I think Ladakh will have also similar projects coming up.
Yes, yes. Mm. As you are aware, overall we are looking at 600 plus village.
Right.
And China is also looking at Shia Kong kinds of villages which are there. So, presently at the state level, LG is responsible. Our core commander is in close touch with him.
Right.
At the district level, DCs are responsible for it and our Defence Forces personnel are part of it.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, what MOD did, that Ops Sadbhavna SOP which was there,
right.
Now that has been amended.
Mm-hmm.
So now we can invest our funds,
mm-hmm.
we can infuse our funds for the Vibrant Village program also.
I see. Okay.
So that's a big game changer which is there and we are party to all the development which is taking
right.
place. The second issue what we have to understand that we are the major users of so many resources in forward areas.
That's right.
Let's take example of National Electric Grid.
Yes.
Now this is something which is required for the villages.
Right.
But cost benefit analysis it may not come up.
Hmm.
So since military is the major user,
right.
Now it has been approved for Durbok, it has been approved for Hanle, Nyoma. So this is the kind of far reach is coming.
That's right.
Let's take the example of communication.
Hmm.
Now this is called as universal.
Yes.
This obligation, service obligation fund.
Right.
Now, again, military being the main user, about 150 BTS towers, mobile towers location which are identified, for 36 we have already marked the land.
Oh.
So, okay. Once these come in forward area,
right.
This will help in development of local economy, vibrant villages,
right.
Also the tourism. So, if you see these kind of things which are taking place,
sure.
But that's not enough.
Mm.
In the Combined Commanders Conference
right.
on 1st of April this year,
mm-hmm.
what Prime Minister told us,
mm-hmm.
that look, you have natural leadership
right.
and you have the remote area connectivity.
Right.
And what I expect from you is to provide the vibrancy to those vibrant villages.
Okay. So, you give them facilities, training, motivation perhaps.
Yes. If I can say, I give them the soul.
Okay.
Because they have the soul.
Right.
But the soul is resting. What I give them, the vibrance which is required.
Right.
Revival of their cultural traditions, their showcasing of their whatever activities they do.
Right.
Telling them how to go about stay home facilities.
Sure.
Wherever there are issues, we provide them temporary restaurant training,
right.
Skill development,
exactly.
Repairs of various kinds,
sure.
Digitization.
Mm.
So, all these things, since we already have all these facilities,
mm-hmm.
we are able to provide them in a big
way. So, which actually only enhances the mutual trust and love between the army and the civilian population.
That is true. And our leaders, if I can say that, they take the ownership of that vibrant village.
Right.
They say everything will be provided.
Yes.
This helipad is yours.
Mm.
We are making a playing field, but this will be used by you.
Right.
These are the kind of things. Medical facilities.
Yes.
Hospital we are making, but we are saying, please come. Even tourists, when they come, please come. We'll look after you.
That's right. So, one of the results, or I would say fallout, positive fallout of this standoff has been the increased synergy between the Air Force and the Army. They say in the army or in the strategic circles that amateurs speak about tactics, but professionals speak about logistics. How has the logistics improved, and what is the synergy between the Air Force and the Army?
I think in all over the world we are the best examples in Northern Command.
Right.
And I keep telling the Western Air Command CNC
right.
that look, you and me are not required. Because at every level, the coordination and decision making is so quick
okay.
that we are only information addresses.
Right.
So, since they understand each other's problems, they are co-located, it becomes very easy to kind of synergize together.
Right.
And as a result, I can say that in logistics, Air Force has been a big game changer. General Joshi also told you
yes.
that during the time of Ops Snow Leopard,
correct.
The kind of movement of A vehicles, force multipliers, yes. the core, strike core which had moved in.
Yes.
That was something phenomenal. And even today, if we look at the C-17, the other aircraft which are there, rotary-wing aircraft, rather we have gone to the extent the airdrop locations have increased. Because when we initially went in, we had lot many air maintained posts.
Right.
Now, some places we have been able to kind of make infrastructure development,
right,
and we have been able to use ATVs and other places. But Air Force has found out new places where we were finding it difficult to even send that.
Sure.
So, the rotary wing, they have started 3-4 places where they are dropping this.
I see.
Gapshan, that is next to DBO,
yes,
again the airdrops have started. So, that way if I can say that it's a major improvement. And I must give an example that once we have some kind of a accident where 22 Jawans had got injured.
Right.
The Air Force with the complete trauma team had moved them at 4 o'clock in the evening.
I see.
Which technically speaking not the correct time for the Air Force.
Right.
And made sure all were brought back to Chandigarh.
That's wonderful.
So they take all kinds of risk along with this.
No, that's wonderful to know, because this actually would be watched by the adversary, I'm sure, you know, all these things that are happening, and which sends a message of its own.
Yes,
I'm sure.
And same is the case with Chinook. Intervalley transfer the way they are carrying out. And of course, attack happens, you are well aware.
Sure.
They are operating along with us in any case.
No, excellent. So, in that respect, now finally, I want to also know that under the Make in India Atmanirbharta initiative of the government, the Indian Army is inducting a lot of equipment from India-made Indian companies, all that. I'm sure Northern Command is one of the major users, or maybe the major user of all this equipment. I would certainly like to understand from you, what are you doing and what are these platforms or systems that are using that are being used by the Northern Command are Atmanirbhar produced. So certainly I would like to know about that.
So to begin with, as far as the aerial platforms are concerned, you rightly said that the in surveillance terms we have the UAVs coming down to drones and mini drones also.
Okay.
Even logistic drones we have. Similarly, the foreign, like we said, long distance observation systems, optical system which we had, now being replaced by the Indian system, which are much better.
Right.
So, as far as the ISR is concerned, in a big way we are having it. As far as the weaponry is concerned, in terms of artillery, if I have to say that, yes, it's coming up. And all the new equipment has been put in Eastern Ladakh, and we are using it effectively.
I see.
Similarly, the mines which are there, and if I can say there's so much of support equipment which is coming up, that is also coming up. And for mobilization, we have the QRF vehicles. So, two companies, major companies have got together and they have given us various variants. So, the EP, emergency procurement, Army Commander Special Financial Power, and there's a OCPP also, that's from Capital and Revenue Combination.
Yes.
These three funds have really enabled us to kind of give impetus to the Atmanirbharta.
That's right.
And here, of course, we are providing the ecosystem for the trials, the forward area tours are taking place.
Of the industries and the MSMEs.
Yes. So they are coming here.
Right.
And they are discussing all these subjects with us. NorTech Symposium, which we conducted recently.
Yes.
And there approximately 150 companies came up, 50 startups came up.
Yes.
So that is the kind of a...
So there's a lot of dialogue between end user and the MSME ecosystem or the Indian companies ecosystem.
Yes. And the enablers are the academia, the DRDO, and of course the approvers who are there sitting in the Army headquarters and the higher headquarters.
It's great to know, but wonderful insight into what's happening in Northern Command. And reassuring, I must say, you know, about what the situation is in Eastern Ladakh. So, thank you very much for your time and all the insights that you provided.